You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
With Thanksgiving, the holiday season is more or less officially upon us, and so are all the issues and social quandaries we face each year, having conveniently forgotten how we dealt with them in the past. So who better to turn to for advice on how to proceed than Philip Galanis? He writes the Social Cues column, the Sunday Style section of the New York Times, and I'm delighted that he has joined us once again on our show.
Thank you, Leonard.
To see you.
Nice to be here, as always.
And we have many options for our listeners to join in the conversation. You can call us at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Have you gotten any better at dealing with holiday issues, or are there still buttons that get pushed for you?
Well, it's very what's interesting and maybe not counterintuitive is that right after a holiday, right after Thanksgiving, is when the letters pour in about Thanksgiving. It's when the hell is fresh in people's minds. They want to turn to someone. So when I was talking with your crew, I loved this idea of being on a kind of triage table. We're going to deal with the fresh wounds and see if we can help people get into the year-end holidays a little bit easier.
What do those people hope to get from you? The advice on next year? By next year, they'll probably have forgotten what you said.
They are so outraged about what has just happened on Thursday that they want to weigh in and they want my blessing about how they handled it, about how they might have handled it. And generally, it looks to me like people are trying for two. People's expectations are too high. If you see someone, even if they're a close relative, if I see a first cousin or even my brother, if I only see him twice a year, there's a really limited range of what I can accomplish over a three-hour table with him. Am I going to change his political opinion about anything? Probably not. So why do I want to go there? The funniest little trio of letters that I had that came in the day after, they all came in on Friday, were about people wearing Make America Great hats again. Two of the letters were from people whose older relatives came in, and they were clearly standing their ground.
But
like
they're
in Florida,
provocative
they
by
were
wearing
very
that they
provocative.
Knew that
they
some
were,
people at the table yeah, would object.
They were ready to rumble. And then another third group was a family of Democrats who put all of their children and themselves in Make America Great Again hats and walked into their family, and they thought they were going to get gales of laughter, and it started a big fat fight. And you know, I wish that I saw my relatives more often, but I don't. It's just we're geographically separated. And so when I do see them, I try to modulate downward, not for what my hopes and dreams of a Jimmy Stewart ideal family holiday would be like, but the reality of this person is bathed in the sort of glow of Fox News six nights a week. What am I going to accomplish in 3 hours? And this person is listening to Rachel Maddow five nights a week. I'm not really going to change her mind about anything either. So why don't we just rethink a little bit, recalibrate?
Well, I do have a very good friend whose politics are quite different than mine. He knows that, and I know that. And we just don't talk about politics. And whenever it comes up coincidentally, we kind of skirt around it and move on to all the other things that connect us. But do you find that it's mostly about politics in general? Or what about family politics? What about food? Are those also major issues?
Food issues are very, very major, especially, almost in some of the same, I don't want to minimize anyone's political disagreements, but a lot of times when you're fighting about anything with your family, whether it's about politics or whether it's about food or whether it's about anything, it's not really about politics or food. It's really about the ancient injuries we're all lugging around from, you know, mom paid more attention to you, and I'm very resentful about that. And so I don't buy your vegan diet, or your gluten intolerance is a load of nonsense. But it's really not about that. But so still, I get lots and lots of letters about people who say, you know, I only asked my sister if I could bring my special vegan farro salad because I thought it would help her, but she got furious that I was trying to co-opt her Thanksgiving.
I would think that some people would appreciate that. Well, that way they don't have to worry about the dietary concerns of others. But then there's also that whole, the person who brought that yams and marshmallow dessert, pie, whatever, last year that nobody ate because it was really disgusting
and also,
and wants to bring it again this year.
Or also the people who bring all the ingredients and want to come into my small New York City kitchen and start cooking an elaborate thing while we're not used to having 20 people for dinner. And so when we're a guest in that situation, being a little thinking it through a little bit would help.
I'm speaking with Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column in the Sunday New York Times style section. And we invite your calls. You don't have to write a letter. You can just give us a call right now at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org/Lopate, or find us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is @LeonardLopate. I understand that you heard from people about there being lots of humble bragging in the What I'm Thankful tour.
I don't know exactly when this started to be a thing in the culture, but it is now apparently a thing in many families or Thanksgiving parties where people go around the table and to announce what they have to be thankful for. And a lot of it is annoying, frankly. I'm very thankful that, you know, Goldman gave me the biggest bonus that they've ever given anyone. I'm grateful that my children got into every Ivy League school. I'm grateful that, and it's a lot,
Those are things to be grateful for.
They are things to be grateful for. There's also a sense of modesty that when we go out into groups and we think, oh, we're in a group of family. But I think whenever we're in a group of more than three, modesty is a nice watchword. I mean,
So do you think we should just eliminate that thing?
Well,
because we don't do it in my family. Mostly we just sit around and grumble about the weather. Or we talk about the food.
I find that we talk about food. We also talk a lot about movies. And we've entered the year-end movie season. So we were talking about Call Me By Your Name. We were talking about Lady Bird. We were talking about all the movies that there are to see. And that's a truer way to express love to someone, I think. Telling them something that I've seen, that I loved, that I recommend that they see too, than talking in some cockamamie way about things I have to be grateful for this year. We all have so much to be grateful for, but as we read in the paper every day, we have a tremendous amount to be terrified about too. So,
do you think more this year? Do you think politics became a bigger issue this year? Because we've had a lot of political turmoil.
We certainly
have. Over the course of my lifetime.
Yeah, we have. And, you know, one of the things that's really interesting is that I was speaking with an older person at a Thanksgiving.
That's what I was referring to myself as, Phil.
Well, I would never think of you as older, Leonard, who said she was comparing this political climate to one in, say, you know, 1972, when Nixon was our president, when Vietnam was literally tearing people apart, when whatever racial platform existed in either the Republican or the Democratic Party was or about women and women's rights were terrifying compared to now. And so, while it's very appealing to think that we've gone to hell and we're on, you know, we're sliding in a supermarket cart to hell in a hand cart, it's not necessarily that way.
But there is a feeling that we are even more polarized now, less likely to be open to the other person's thoughts than we were in the past.
Children saying that they're not, writing to me saying they're not sleeping because they're so frightened about the North Korea threat and how Trump will respond.
Don't forget that Republicans voted to impeach Richard Nixon. I don't think that that could happen today.
No.
Either party would do that. I don't know if any Democrats voted to impeach Bill Clinton. But we have become more and more polarized, and that probably is reflected in family conversations as well.
Sure.
Let's take a call. Eileen from Cranford has called 212-433-9692. Hi, Eileen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This did not happen this year. But it's something that I've always wanted to ask Mr. Galanis about. I went to Thanksgiving with my family, my husband and my kids, to my sister's house some years ago. And it's siblings, you know, spouses, kids. She has a pretty big house, but everybody couldn't fit in the dining room. So she put place cards at every place, and I came to discover that my family and I were seated not in the dining room, not in the kitchen, but in the basement.
Whoa, wow.
Yeah, she had set up her pool table beautifully, you know, with flowers and place cards in place, but we were sitting in the basement.
And other people were sitting upstairs?
Yes.
And there was, and the living room was full and all that?
Not the living room. It was the dining room and the kitchen, but there was room. It's a kind of house that has a kitchen and family room together.
That's a pretty tone-deaf maneuver, yeah. Did you just grit your teeth through it, or did you need to speak up?
Well, we had driven 3 hours to get there. My husband's inclination was to get up and leave, but then we would have been, you know, no dinner on Thanksgiving. So I decided to pick up my plate, and I sat in the kitchen with my sister. And my father, by the way, was in the kitchen, not in the dining room. And my husband and my son sat in the basement, but there was a big TV down there, so they just watched TV. And I'm curious as to what Mr. Galanis would recommend as, you know, what to have done in that situation.
Well, but before, Philip, before you answer, I want to ask you, Eileen.
Yes.
What happened the next year? Did they invite you again? Would you have gone back?
This happened probably 10 years ago. We have never been back for Thanksgiving.
Right. Right. Wow. There are moments where we come to a fork in the road and we say, okay, do we set this bridge on fire or do we just quietly walk over it and try to, I mean, once the dinner is underway, there's very little you could have done other than what you did. And I understand that somebody, which is, you know, bringing her plate up to sit with her sister and her dad, but it, especially for an in-law like your husband or a kid who might be, I don't know how old your son was, but might be feeling a little awkward, it's sort of a lot to expect that they're going to start, sort of brazening their way into one room when they've been sort of relegated to the basement. So I don't know. I think I would have done exactly what you did, but I do think I might have. Did your sister invite you back the next year, and you just came up with an excuse?
And
or?
Is this something that you've talked to Philip? You often advise people to tell the other person that it upset you, as long as you do it in a way that isn't
right. Probably not that day while her hair is on fire because she's having so many people in her house for dinner that she has to put people in the basement, which seems like a crazy. I don't know how she came to that decision. It seems a bit crazy. But maybe the next time you saw her, to have talked about it might have been made. Well, you know what it might have done? It might have made it so that you didn't need to call up today because you could have worked it out and there'd be no remnant in your heart of it being there. And that's the part I hate. I hate the fact that you're carrying this ugly thing around 10 years later.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I hadn't thought about the point that my husband as an in-law and my son, and he was young, not being in a place to really confront that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. We really have not talked about it, and it is something I'm carrying around. So that's great advice. Thank you.
No, my pleasure.
And you can tell them to listen to this show. It's available as a podcast. It's available in archives.
It's a great idea. I love it.
Thank you for calling us, Eileen. We have to take a little break. When we come back, we'll discuss more about Thanksgiving postmortems and the like. It doesn't only have to apply to Thanksgiving.
No.
There's so many holidays, so many times
when
families get together
fast.
And problems
yeah.
can arise. Our number here is 212-433-9692. My guest is one of our favorites on the show, Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column for the Sunday New York Times style section, among other things for the Times. Stay with us for more. We are back with Philip Galanis, who writes a Social Cues column in the Sunday New York Times style section. And we are doing Thanksgiving postmortems. But this could apply, as I said earlier, to any time the family gets together or people get together and suddenly you find yourself
yeah.
in an uncomfortable situation. But I was thinking while that last caller was talking about what do you do with who to invite and who not to invite? Because, she can turn down an invitation, but when you're putting together an invitation list, somebody's going to think, well, why wasn't I invited?
Right. And that happens especially as families get further and further separated. You know, she had to drive 3 hours, which isn't, you know, I've certainly heard of people driving farther. Putting together just those family members you actually have a heart connection with, that leads to lots of hurt feelings. And
what about if you got tired of having somebody talk politics all the time and you said, you know, I really don't want Uncle Irving here again this
right.
year. It was so unpleasant last year.
Well, one of the things that we definitely see, and I don't think this is also symptomatic of politics. I don't think politics caused it. We are all so overconnected. We are always refreshing and getting so much new information that our fuses have become a lot shorter for how much we're willing to deal with. So let's say when my mother was hosting Thanksgiving, she could put up with Uncle Irving once a year. You know, even though he was loathsome, she could do it. Whereas I now get to the end of my rope a lot faster. We all get to the end of our ropes a lot faster. So Uncle Irving says one thing I disagree with about something, and the next thing you know, it's bye-bye, Uncle Irving. You can, you know, make your own turkey.
Well, can't you diffuse those things? Aren't there ways of gracefully getting out of something that can turn really heated?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think I had... Not this Thanksgiving, but last Thanksgiving, I was seated next to somebody who was really just trying to provoke me into a fight. It was very clear.
Knew who you were?
He knew exactly who I was and was trying, knew everything I stood for and was trying only to provoke a fight. And so I said to him, listen, we're going to be sitting here for 3 hours. I'm never going to convince you of anything and you're not going to convince me of anything, but I bet it would take us 3 seconds to find something we both really agreed on and enjoyed and we could talk about. But this guy clearly liked, some people relish fighting.
Now, I probably would have said, turkey is supposedly has some chemical that makes you sleepy. I can't wait until I go to sleep and I don't have to listen to this.
That's not true. I don't believe that for a second.
Let's take a call. From Robert from Rockland County. Hi. Where in Rockland County?
Up near Spring Valley.
I used to live in Valley Cottage.
Oh, my God. Well, it's changed. It has changed.
Ever since I left. Yeah.
Let me ask your guest a question on how best to handle a prospective son-in-law's first official visit. You know, what I know of the guy, I like him, but he's from the South. He's from South Carolina. They pray before meals. We don't. You know, how much insincerity is tolerable? I mean, consider it just a pro forma thing, or You know, just what would you do? I mean, I don't dislike the guy, and my daughter certainly doesn't dislike him. But, you know, I'm sort of at a loss, like, you know, how much to stand on principle here and how much to, you know, just, you know, hell fellow well met.
Yeah. Especially in this situation, I would bend over backward. I would really bend over backward because it's going to be, this is going to be the one of the gating experiences. I mean, and I don't care about him at all. This is the gating experience between you and your daughter for so many years. Whether, even if she stays, doesn't end up marrying this guy, she will remember this as one of the formative experiences of how you treated somebody that she said is very important to you. So, I mean, I wouldn't go so far as pretending you say prayers before meals if you don't. But if you want to, you know, if you want to ask your daughter if you know, there, she'd like, I mean, I would just run everything by her. Would it be okay if we would he be like a moment of silence beforehand?
Yeah. Would you like to say a few words?
Or what about the fact that it's in your house this time? If you go to his house, his family's house in, you said, North Carolina?
South Carolina.
Either way.
No, I think it's a little scarier.
Okay, but in that house, the custom is to say prayers before meals, so you join in. In your house, the custom is not to. Shouldn't you just assume that he's going to respect the way you have your meals?
Yeah, when in Rome, do it the Romans.
You can totally play it that way. I would just keep checking in with your daughter, like an annoying little hoverer. I would be making sure your daughter was happy with the way things were going.
Thank you very much.
That's just my two cents.
Thank you for calling us, Robert. This is the Leonard Lopate Show on WMIC, WMIC.org. My guest is Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column for the Sunday New York Times style section, and we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Before we get to the next call, when people ask you for advice, do you think it's possible to short-circuit an argument or a fight?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you...
You gave advice earlier, but...
Absolutely. If it is always under our control. Now, the thing that gets scary is when sometimes when we are caught so short or... And we launch into a reflex of, you know, counterattack rather than just taking a breath. Now, there are some issues on which we don't want to take a deep breath. You know, when somebody starts... you know, talking about the two sides of Nazism, then you don't want to take a breath. If that's a fundamental issue in your character, you don't want to talk about both sides. But most of the fights that I hear aren't about things like that. Most of the fights I hear are about somebody getting aggravated about something, probably more aggravated than they mean. And then do we really need to escalate it? Of course, it's easier to fall into the trap, and you think it might feel really good to zing your cousin. But at the end of the day, you're going to feel a lot better if you don't.
What about the host's role in all of that? Can't you just suddenly interrupt and say, more wine?
Yeah. I think a hovering host is a great thing, like I wanted Robert to be, the hovering host.
Kim from Maplewood, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I'm sorry. I have a cold, so I'm speaking a little
hoarse. Don't apologize
today,
for having a cold. You had
you
no control
great.
Over it.
So I was calling to get some advice or hear what you have to say regarding having to spend holidays with in-laws, an extended in-law family that you just don't really like. And every holiday just has to be spent with this large extended group. And it's there's a lot of, you know, reasons for that, for not enjoying their company, but I find it very, very difficult to just sort of grin and bear it for eternity.
And you've already dealt with your partner. You've already spoken to your partner, and she or he is simply not willing to bend on the question. It's like holidays are just it's non-negotiable. We're going.
Yeah, I think it's difficult because he doesn't want to hurt his you know, brother who's married to this into this family. So it's he agrees it's a challenging family to deal with, but really feels like it would be insulting.
Well, I think I honestly think it's more for you, between you and your husband, because I think that for him to, I get that. I was terrified of upsetting my mother for like 50 years of my life. But at the end of the day, he's got to look out for you and you've got to look out for him. And to take put a sort of a taint on a holiday and make you go sit with people that neither of you really particularly enjoys, I think you should be able to come up with some, you know, a vacation, a getaway, a long weekend getaway to the, you know, somewhere lovely in New England. I don't buy that he gets to just call the shots on every holiday and that his brother's feelings are paramount in your relationship.
Let's take another call. Frank from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you, Leonard and Philip. A quick question. Earlier in the show, you mentioned about how often issues with family can be something like they got more, one sibling got more attention from their mom. So in the case of your first caller, in the scenario that you presented to her to speak with them, what if her sister wasn't that good of a listener, didn't really have the skill set, and it was a deeper issue? Could you speak about another case scenario, how she might have dealt with that in the case, say, her sister wasn't such a good listener and wasn't really going to hear her out?
Well, that's a great point, because a lot of the time speaking up isn't for the other person. It's for us. It's for us who are doing the speaking. She's been carrying around this thing for 10 years. And if she'd spoken up, even if the sister had said, "Ugh, Diane, you're crazy. I only put you in the basement because there was no room for you anywhere else. And I certainly didn't mean it as a dig. And you're being oversensitive." Even if that's how she thought about it, I still think that the woman who talked about it would feel a little better today than she does by carrying the injury around with her. Sometimes our brothers and sisters aren't going to be as reflective as we want them to be. They're not going to remember history the same way. They're not even going to remember the fact that mom did pay more attention to one than the other. They're going to say, "Are you crazy? She liked you so much more. Don't you remember when?" That's the nature of memory. So even if you can't get to a resolution, the idea of gently raising an issue and asking for it to be acknowledged, I think she'll still feel better.
Philip, when you come here, you also inspire calls that have nothing to do with the topic at hand.
Which I love.
Scott from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. I have a question about how I handled something recently. I'm working on a creative project that revolves around homosexual themes, and I asked my mom for some financial support for the project. And what I got back first was that she wanted me to keep my homosexuality to myself. And then as I was sitting with that, a check came in the mail for $25. And it was sort of like a handshake and a slap in the face all at the same time. And I, of course, wanted to thank her for the contribution that she made financially. So I wrote her a card and I thanked her. And I also addressed the other issue that she wanted me to keep this part of myself quiet. And I told her that I couldn't and I wasn't going to, and that it was just that kind of reaction that made me want to work on the project in the first place. And I was curious if my handling of the expression of gratitude was inappropriate because I included how I felt about her other reaction. It was a confusing situation, and
right.
I felt my way through it the best I could, but I was curious what you thought about when you're expressing gratitude, is it appropriate to, in a way, speak up for yourself? Because I, too, am terrified of upsetting my mother.
I understand that. The only thing, and it's a quibble, but the only thing I might have done differently is just thanked her in the note and talked to her about her desire that you keep being gay quiet. Because I just don't want her to. Sometimes when we write things, especially when they're a little, when they're, I know you certainly don't sound like you were contentious, but if she read it as contentious, things with that come written down on paper can seem a lot more black and white than we mean them to be. So when I talk to people about disagreements, I try to talk on the phone or in person. But generally, I think your impulse was a good one. She did something sweet, and you were thanking her for it. And she also did something a little not sweet, and you needed to address it. So I understand what you did.
We have very little time left. We want to sneak Ellie in, and we're so sorry to all the other callers who we're not going to get to because there's so many really good calls exactly. coming in. But Ellie, can you make it quick?
Sure. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a brother-in-law who's writing a blog. He's completely politically different than all of us. They're coming for Christmas, and he calls people out in person for not reading it. I try to read it and like it. I don't comment. But now he's calling out my college-age kids and kind of shaming them for not reading the blog. And my husband and I don't know how to handle it.
Now, do you generally agree with his politics, or does that not matter?
No, not at all.
Not at all. She's only reading it out of support. And the idea that he thinks... The idea that he thinks that other people have an obligation to read him, you should just, in fact, send him to, I can tell, think of like 2,500 writers who will say, none of us get the audience we deserve or want or need, and we manage to get along. He's doing something because it suits him. No, you have no obligation, and your kids should stand up for themselves.
That's our concern. I don't want a thing to spew up when they're staying with us for 5 days.
Can she say even Tolstoy's relatives didn't all read his books?
Or the kids can read it for a day or two before, but I don't know why we would. I mean, the thing about bullies is, I mean, and he is being, he's using his insensitivity like a hammer. He's hitting you over the head with it until you give in and give him what he wants. I don't think that's the way to deal with bullies. I think your kids can say, they have so much stuff that they're trying to read, that they need to read, that they'll try to get to it when they can.
Now, Philip, we have run out of time. We didn't even get to the whole notion of presents, but
no.
I hope you come back before Christmas.
Are you kidding? Of course I'm coming back. I'm leaving my coat here.
Christmas and Hanukkah?
Yeah.
Lots of tension.
Lots to do.
Meanwhile, we'll be reading you every Sunday in the New York Times.
I'm very
grateful. Social cues column in the Sunday New York Times style section. This one, the last one, had an answer. I'm not going to tell you which one, that just had me laughing for about 5 minutes.
Terrific.
So
nice to hear.
Come back soon.
Thank you, Leonard.